Welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello and welcome to episode number 20 of the Self-Help Podcast. What are you laughing at, Sean? Why do you always laugh when I start this up?
Would you look really serious when you start it off?
Well, I know, I'm just that keen not to muck it up.
Okay.
This is take two, isn't it?
Yes, this is, it's when we get to take three.
The Self-Help Podcast, this is our little show that's all about you.
It's a big show. It's all about you, the listener.
It is. It is, yeah. Well, we try to make it about that. How are you doing, Sean? You had a good week?
I'm okay. I've had man flu.
Oh.
Yeah, it's on the way out. You know what they say? It's children get colds. Men get flu, and women get on with it.
That's your first self-help tip.
Be a woman, they get the flu.
I'm sorry to hear that. You seem all right, though.
I'm okay. Okay, just been a bit full up and heady. You know.
Yeah. Yeah. You're standing and you're moving around and you're working, so it must be man flu.
Yeah, definitely. The thing is, if you spend half your life in hospital, then you're in the place where it's germ city, isn't it? You're going to get everything that's going, yeah.
I get stuff from nursery, and my wife's a teacher, she brings things from school.
Yeah.
Who knows what, but...
Yeah, no, I've been sat for the last few months with people barking at me in consulting rooms and thinking, wow, I've been really lucky not to get this. Well, it's finally got me. So.
You've been working with dogs now. You're a dog whisperer. This is another one of our time travel episodes in that Sean and I were in London a couple of weeks ago, and we were productive, and we recorded a few episodes on the bounce.
It was good.
Didn't we? While we were sitting in the offices, Rethink. Thanks again to Rethink for letting us use that space.
Yep.
Brilliant. So shortly we'll be transported.
Yet again.
Southeast. 200 miles.
Time travel.
To London. And you might even get another sound effect this week. Did you like the one last week?
Yeah, it was very good. Yes. Can we have a different one this week?
Yeah, there's plenty in there. Yeah.
Plus a motorbike.
Before we go on, and this week we're talking about fear. Basically, I'm talking about spiders. This week we go a lot deeper than that, obviously. Before we do, I just want to thank some of our wonderful listeners. First of all, Mike, who's emailed us in, who Sean and I know Mike pretty well.
Yeah, nice guy, Mike.
Yes, he's a fan of the show, which is great, and he listens to this while he's doing his emails, doesn't he?
Yeah,
sorting through his emails, he multitasks.
Yeah, no, I wonder if I send him an email, will it be writing to me whilst listening to me at the same time?
I don't know. I don't know what he's doing right now. Maybe right now he should email us.
Yes.
And say, get on with it. Or
sort of prattling about.
Yeah. Also, we've had a few reviews on iTunes. Two in the UK still, one by Chris Skeptic and Agnes N. Both 5 stars. Beautiful. Thank you, guys. And we've had another one, our second, in the Canadian iTunes store.
That's good.
It's quite interesting as well. Starlight number 5. 5 stars. I'm very impressed with this podcast. Some of the British expressions are hard to understand, but otherwise informative and very down-to-earth. So thanks, Starlight. I'd love to know which expressions...
Yeah. I think that's really important. It would be really lovely to understand what it is ununderstandable about what we're talking about, because if we're trying to be accessible to people, to understand what it is that people don't get.
Yeah.
So, I know that there was a London soap called EastEnders that went to America.
There is. I'm sorry to say
it's still going.
It's still going.
And then when they shot it out in America, they had to put a book out with it so that people could understand what on earth they were talking about because of the odd London accents and the things they were saying. So that would be really useful.
Yeah.
To know that, please, if you could.
Yeah, no, honestly, let us know. Email podcast@liveinthepresent.co.uk. Let us know... How we can improve this show. I found that I think my accent is changing a little bit. Oh, I have a podcast accent.
Maybe that's why I laugh when you start.
Maybe. And I was down, I was watching a game of football. My pal runs a Sunday league team.
Yep.
So I was down there watching in the rain on Sunday, watching those guys win. And my accent probably shifted. I was probably a bit more Scouse then, a bit more Liverpoolian.
Yes. Scouse means to come from Liverpool.
Go ahead, mate. And that's about it. Yeah, okay. So if you could send us your feedback, chaps. Let us know how you're enjoying the show. You can leave us a review on iTunes. Or what we're really keen now, if you could, is to share this with a friend. We want to spread the word of the Self-Help Podcast. If you like what we're doing and you appreciate the huge amounts of valuable information...
Lots of fun.
Yeah, then just pass it on.
Yeah, yeah. Let's build the audience.
Pass it on.
And please do feel free to email in. It's nice when I've got some nice email conversations going with different people. It's good.
Oh, no, it's fascinating. Good, all over the world.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Right, Sean, let's go to London and let's talk about fear. See you there.
Okay.
You right, Sean?
I'm good. Yeah, we're at the top of the tower.
We haven't been here all week. We're feeling energised and we've got some time, so we're recording a few episodes on the bounce here, eh?
Yeah, we've been hearing lots and lots of emergency vehicles flying by down 15.
I know. You wonder where they're going, don't you?
Yeah.
You wonder the stories going on and grateful and we're not involved.
Stories in the big city.
For more information about the work that Sean and I are doing, and Ree, of course. How could I forget Ree?
Yes, Hi, Ree.
Head over to liveinthepresent.co.uk. You'll be able to get the links and show notes to everything we're about to discuss. And you can also get your mitts on some cool free resources, which I think people like and they find them
good feedback.
Useful. Meditation good feedback. Stuff, free e-books, all sorts.
Yep.
And of course, notices about this weekly podcast.
Yep.
Head on over. This week, we're talking about fear, aren't we, Sean?
Yep.
Phobias.
Yep.
Irrational, who knows, but let's find out.
What are you afraid of? What's your fear?
Spiders. Classic, isn't it?
Big ones, small ones?
Do you think that's the... I'm all right with small ones, to be fair. I can have them little ones crawl over me. Anything bigger than like a 2p coin. And I'm starting to get a bit agitated.
The thing that's weird about phobias is someone else's phobias that aren't yours seem ridiculous. You know, why would anybody be scared of spiders from my point of view? And yet there's things that I'm scared of that probably make you laugh.
Could you have a tarantula crawl up your arm and down your shirt?
I'd probably be okay holding a tarantula. I don't think I would enjoy one crawling under my head or something like that.
No.
But spiders generally don't. I'd pick a spider up, and even if it's like the size of a hand of bananas, I'd pick it up and put it outside. That doesn't bother me.
So what are you afraid of?
Me is drowning. And I know where that comes from, because for years I had this feeling of, and I'd dream about it, odd thing. And I even did a diving exam to try and get over my fear of drowning. And then in the end, I went and had some regressive analysis, went right back to very, very early years. And the guy that was doing the analysis said to me, go and talk to your mother, see what it's about. When I spoke to my mother, and she said that the very day that I was born came out very quickly, home birth, and my father and the midwife went off and had a cup of tea. I'm left with my mother in a crib beside her. She falls asleep, and suddenly she wakes up, and I was blue and gagging and had to be resussed. And I think that that's what the... Because it's such an early memory, I can't grab it cognitively. I think they probably just turned me upside down and whacked me on the back or something like that.
Back in the 1800s.
A little bit of punching of the chest, you know, in the 1800s.
Just got that.
Yeah, they got the candles out.
But you lived to tell the tale, but you were left with this...
Yeah, it's not a really odd feeling. Odd feeling. And if I'm reading a book or watching a film and people are in that situation, it really makes me go, like it's a real kind of intake of breath. And the idea of things like waterboarding and those kind of torture kind of things really give me the willies.
It's not. Yeah. It's kind of like it's torture, but not. There's no real. I mean, you can't die from waterboarding, but. I'm told it's pretty horrific.
You can't die from waterboarding, it's fine.
So what's the big deal?
What's the big deal? Yeah, no, thank you.
Yeah, Christopher Hitchens, a writer, who I think he died last year, but anyway, he didn't die from waterboarding, but he went through the process of it, because he was...
To see what it was like.
Yeah, he's a big critic of the Iraq War and what have you.
Yeah.
Or was he for it? I can't remember. Al-Arrays, whatever.
Yes.
He wasn't. But check it out. He tried it and he lasted seconds and he was like, stop. Mm. I would say that was a rational fear. We've looked at the definition of a phobia and it's an irrational fear or aversion to something.
Yeah.
Which, would that make a rational fear, not a phobia?
I don't know. We've been talking about that, haven't we? I mean, people are scared of flying. And you could say that it's an irrational fear because it's safer to fly than it is to drive in a car. Statistically, it is. So it is that irrational that it's fearful. But actually, to be 7 miles up in the air in a metal tube actually isn't a sensible place to be, and it's not a natural place to be.
No.
So I think there's a question mark.
But safe. Statistically, rather safe.
Hey? So does that mean we say that it's a rational fear than an irrational fear?
Mm. Well, we're splitting hairs, really, I guess, aren't we? Because it's an issue for people, whatever their phobia. And
We
need to start looking at ways to get over the fear, hey?
Yeah, and one of the things about phobias is that they can seem crazy to you. If someone's phobic about the colour blue, you think that's bananas.
Well, yeah, there's an article we've got here that we'll put on the show notes, 101 Strange and Interesting Phobias.
Yeah.
So let's have a quick look at them, because some of them are rather interesting.
Can you pronounce them?
Hang on a second. I've got to forget the article up again first.
Maybe there's a phobia about not being able to pronounce phobias.
Maybe. Okay, so, yeah, we've got colours here. We've got a phobia of clocks. The trouble is I can't even pronounce most of these. Are that funny? Fear of clocks, fear of all sorts of colours, fear of cooking, dancing, fear of depth. Okay.
I mean, is there one there's the fear of working?
Yeah, these are not alphabetical order, so let's have a look. Work or functioning, yeah, there is.
Yeah.
And fear of your own reflection. Imagine that.
Wow. Well, you wouldn't even be able to look in the mirror.
Selenophobia. The fear of your own reflection.
Oh, right. That sounds like cellulite. Fear of cellulite. I mean, effectively, you can be phobic about anything.
Yeah.
Once you've been sensitised to it. So you'll find a million words for phobias that just describe things that people are sensitised to. So the issue is about how do you get sensitised, and we're back into the middle of the brain in the amygdala, little limbic system in there, and that we build templates of cells that respond to our fears, so that you got somewhere, it was maybe watching your mother with spiders. If your mother goes ooh-wah-wah with spiders, you build a template of cells, you go ooh-wah with spiders, and so it builds up. But one of the things about phobic groups of cells in the brain, the groups of cells are the templates for that phobia, the more you visit them, then the hotter, the deeper it becomes.
Wow.
So all phobias get worse over time. All phobias.
Really? Worse?
Yeah.
I need to get mine sorted then.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe one of the things, because we're going to look at treatments, is maybe one of the things that we should do as an experiment for our listeners here is to actually get you to do some therapy and see whether we could clear you.
Okay. Would that involve getting some spiders in there?
No.
Okay. No. So what are the ways of treating phobias then?
There is the one that you just suggested, which is if someone's scared of spiders or rats, what you do is you fill a pit with rats and throw them in there.
And next.
It's sink or swim, isn't it? And that's called flooding. That you get someone to overload with whatever their phobic sources to the point where they realise at some level that it's not scary.
That'd be quite literal your phobia of drowning.
Yes,
just chuck you in a load of water. You can swim, right?
Yeah, which is weird because I can swim. And I can swim underwater, even with all the gear on, but I have this awful feeling in me while I'm doing it.
Even when you're just swimming normally?
Yeah. If my head's under the water.
Right.
Yeah, I can do it. It's okay, but it's still there. And I have had some treatment for it, but I haven't had the treatment I'm suggesting you have for spiders, so maybe I should have that treatment as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So maybe we should both experiment with being treated. Oof. And then tell people how we get on with
it. We should dive in and preach what we're
talking your money about. Where your mouth is.
Yeah.
So flooding's one, which is literally you overload on your phobic
sense. Is that successful?
It's up for some people, it is. I mean, I guess if you're terrified of rats and you're surrounded by enough rats for long enough and you realise that you're not going to die, I suppose in the end you kind of get used to it.
Yeah. But I mean, before we get to the other, however many there are, is flooding the last resort? That mistake's not the starting point.
I wouldn't go anywhere near flooding, either as a therapist or as a therapy.
Yeah.
To me, that's the crudest form of,
Yeah.
Not good.
Okay.
Slow introduction, the idea of habituation, because we're always talking about how the brain, from our point of view, is a habit-forming mechanism. And if you're trying to get the brain to form a new habit, which is the reverse of the phobia, so say with your spider thing, we've got a long corridor in this building, haven't we? What we could do is get a spider in a jar and have it at long way away, 30, 40 yards up the corridor. And over a period of time, which we know from the other work that we've done is 30 days. So we need the 30 days to build the new circuit in your brain.
Sure.
We'd bring, a bit at a time, we'd bring the spider down.
Not so one leg at a time.
That'd be cool.
Cruel.
You bring it down the corridor. So every session it gets a bit closer, and then it's in the room, and then it's on the table, and then maybe you're at the point where you can actually handle the jar. That would be habituation. So you gradually get used to desensitizing your fear of whatever the object of your phobia is by getting closer to it. That'd be one. The one that I favour overall, and the one that has to be the best from my point of view, is called rewinding. And in rewinding, what you do is you balance the thinking bit and the feeling bit of your brain, so you desensitize the emotional center in your brain, so that you you stop being emotionally aroused by whatever the source of the phobia is.
Okay.
And we do that all the time with people that develop phobic responses. Because say someone's been in a car crash and then they're terrified of going in the car, and that would be labelled post-traumatic stress or post-traumatic stress disorder.
Yep.
But really, it's nothing other than a phobic response. It's the same part of your system that's kicking off. So we would do rewind. And when you do rewind, you get someone to lie down, usually close their eyes, do a good relaxation. It's not a deep thing. People can get up and walk anytime they want, but they're in a state of relaxation. And then having got them there, you create a safe place, which is where the centre of the brain is not aroused. So if someone's visualising a beach or a garden or somewhere that's nice and flat,
yeah.
And then you take them away from that and you get them to actually watch the memories that they have on a television screen. They're in control of it because they have the controller. And you get them to watch the memories forward and run them backwards and watch them forward and run them backwards.
And they're not allowed to change channels or anything like that?
No, they've got to stay on one channel. On channel one, yeah? And the more they do it, the more the cognition takes over. And the less the emotions there, until they can run the pictures and the memories without getting anxious about it. And you keep relating, you're reassociating those images with the safe place, so they calm you down rather than make you upset.
Okay.
So it's a little technique that's been around for over 100 years. The guy that originally did it, whose name I cannot remember off the top of my head, used a glass ball, so that people were watching the images in a glass ball. That went on to the idea of a film screen or a television screen, and I guess if you're going to update it, it'd be a computer.
I've heard you mention rewinding before in a past episode. I'll try and find it and I'll put it in. I'll put a link in.
But rewinding is a powerful technique to get rid of any unwanted emotion that intrudes in your life.
And from the three we've just mentioned, that would be the preferred method for you?
Well, it would for me. Some people would like to do other kinds of things. I mean, we talked about hypnosis, and in hypnotic work, there's two forms of hypnosis. There's suggestive hypnotherapy, where you're trying to put something into someone's mind, which is you may be putting in resilience or confidence or whatever. Or there's analytical hypnotherapy, where you're taking things out that are inappropriate. So if I was doing suggestive hypnotherapy, I would be suggesting that you're tougher than the spider and you're big and you're strong and you could chase it down the corridor.
Yes.
Yes. If I was doing analytical hypnotherapy, I'd be taking the spider out of your mind so that it wasn't worrying you and dumping it somewhere else.
And never so having any cross my path ever again.
Yeah, thank you. but you chuck away the feelings of it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, the hypnosis is a thing. But the other one that we looked at, which I think is self-therapy, really, is back to my good old chestnut, which is the mindful meditation.
Mm.
Yeah, and one of the things I was saying to you is if you go on the longer meditation retreat, 7 days, 10 days, that kind of thing. Most people around the middle of that time, day 4 or 5, that kind of thing, have got the bits of unresolved emotion inside them that are coming out.
You've done the Vipassana.
I've done quite a few other than the Vipassana as well. But though, so in all those things, you face things.
What bubbled up for you then?
In the last one. That was really weird.
If you don't mind talking.
I don't mind talking. I mean, you know me, I'm an open book.
Yeah, that's why I asked you. I knew you.
Yeah. I fell off a scaffold in 1994. Have I not said this on air? I fell off a scaffold in 1994 because I was on it because of someone else's mistake, and I was trying to rectify someone else's mistake. And because I was angry, I fell off the scaffold and landed on my knee. I went down about 8 feet and smashed my knee and damaged the right-hand side of my body.
I didn't know that.
Didn't you know that? All right.
Nope.
That was 94, and I walked with a limp until 2000. And the last bit of work was an amazing osteopath in Nantwich. Enormous guy, about 6'7", very skinny. He's the only man I've ever had bouncing up and down on top of me. But he did the most amazing things to my back and put my back in and got it to stay there. And I could actually walk without sticks and without falling over, which is my trick. I'd step off the pavement and fall over in front of a car. It took me 6 years to get it back again. So in the meditation course, what happens is that I started to re-experience the pain of those sites where the injuries were as though it actually just happened. And it was real, live, psychosomatic pain going on. But with it came this enormous anger. I had huge waves of anger coming out of me. I could have stabbed people. I was really, really angry. Wow. And gradually, over the days, it took me about 9 hours to work through it, to get to the point where I'd actually let go of the psychosomatic tension. And the weird thing is that I haven't been, since 1994, there's things I haven't been able to do with my leg, like yogic stuff and things like that.
Right.
And suddenly, having let go of this emotion, now I can do them.
Wow.
So the psychosomatic tensions were holding
in. Powerful.
Yeah, and it was the mindful meditation that was the therapy. It was that got my own thinking and ego out of the way so that the stuff could come out.
Mm.
And when you do a lot of meditation, you get that kind of self-psychotherapy going on. Yeah? It can be a little bit difficult sometimes. And most times when you're doing those kinds of courses, you see people walking around looking a bit like someone just hit them with a hammer or something like that, as they're dealing with their own stuff. But as you get to the end of the program, you see people lightening up as they're letting go, and that's good.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So that's exact.
Yeah.
When you sign up for that type of thing, is that something that you know that people are made aware that will come out at some point, or is it
It depends on the organisation that you're with. Very often, no. I mean, not everybody is going to hit a crisis every time. So it's a bit different. If you're saying to someone, hey, you're going to hit a crisis now, then you've got a preconception before you go in there.
Yeah, let them do their own thing.
Certainly once you've done it once, then... Because there is quite a high fallout rate with that kind of work, that people will go on those long-term meditation retreats and never do another one. They'll do the first one, and after they think, I'm not doing that again, because it was a difficult thing to do.
It was hard work.
Yeah.
They were maybe thinking it was just going to be a nice, relaxing...
Yeah, and the thing is, once you've got through the mess, it is a nice, relaxing thing. You know, but there are things that all of us have locked away in the back of our cupboards that need to be sorted out.
Yeah.
And very often the thing that we're phobic about is the thing that's locked in the back of the cupboard. So it's in Carl Jung would say that it's something that's inside you but outside of your control. You don't know what it is, but you're getting this phobic response. So you're scared of spiders, but you don't know why you're scared.
Well, I'm just thinking about it as we're talking now. There's two incidents now. There's one I talked about on the train up down to London, about when a friend next door, mucking around when we were 5, 6, threw a dead spider and it landed on my knee. But I remember she had it in her hand before then, and I remember being terrified that it was coming towards me. So I was already afraid. That wasn't the... But I also remember an incident, I don't know if it was before or after, where I was putting on my shoes as a kid and there was something in my shoe, and not knowing what it was, I just stuck my hand in there and yanked it out, looked, blooming massive spider in my hand, and I just flipped out. And you know, I can feel it now. I can feel that fear building inside.
The interesting thing about both those examples, I know they both included a spider and you're using that as an example, but if you think about the girl threw a spider at you, and that could have come out in your system as, I'm phobic about women because they do things like throw spiders at you. Or the one in your shoe could have come out as, I'm phobic about shoes because shoes have spiders in.
Yeah.
I mean, you've gone for the spider, but people's phobias are peculiar. Or maybe it was a black pair of shoes, so I'm phobic about black pairs of shoes. I'm okay with brown, black, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and once you get into the specifics of people's phobias, it gets quite interesting as to how they hooked into what they hooked into.
Yeah. I still kick out. I still whack shoes together before I put them on. Now,
do you?
Honestly, but if they've been in the cupboard in our hall, which is a bit, well, it's a place where a spider. If I was a spider, I'd live in there probably.
So I can remember when we had the farm. I put on a pair of wellies, and there was a mouse in my wellie. He didn't bite me, but I realised he was there as he wriggled around by my toes. So I tapped him out, and after I did tap out my boots every time. Before I put them on, just to make sure they weren't announcing.
This is a relevant time to be publishing this because it's kind of spider season in the UK.
Yeah.
It's getting colder out, and then creatures are trying to get inside in our houses and just survive a few weeks longer.
Yeah, two things. Both spiders and mice tend to come in. You get a lot of field mice coming into the houses this time of year as well.
So tough time for me. I got it real tough this time of year.
Yeah, when we were doing our extension on the house, so the back of the house was open for a little while, and we had mice come in then, field mice come in, and they were quite difficult to get rid of, but there were lots of people standing on chairs going, there's a mouse.
See, I'm fine with mice, fine with snakes, all that stuff, but who knows. But about fear of death, that's got to be pretty high on the old
scale. Well, I don't know, you said that to me earlier on, and okay, I guess... Even if someone is suicidal, if you grab them and stick their head in a bucket, they're going to fight to get their head out of the bucket. You know, so, I mean, death is theoretically a natural process. We're all going to get there. And I do see people, I do work with people that go off and die with a smile on their face, and it's okay. Yeah, I guess that the issue is has to be about how do we experience the idea of life and death, what happens before, what happens afterwards, all that kind of philosophical stuff. Yeah, if I go back to Ramji, my teacher, and he's saying to me, you're not ready to live until you're ready to die. And I'm thinking, I don't really understand what you mean at the time. But as I've got older, I realise what he means. You know, when you've come to terms with the idea that you are going to die and death is going to come and knock on the door and go, it's your turn, Hoyle, you know, then you need to be able to go there with a smile on your face. Mm-hmm. And I think that certainly issues like meditation and mindfulness are a part of that. The people that I know that go to death in the easiest sense are the people who are relaxed and calm and are very peaceful about the world, and they're okay to let it go.
Yeah, yeah. And you can use death's a good example. Maybe you can use fear as a positive kind of thing in terms of knowing that death is on its way and getting things in order and doing certain things before it arrives.
But fear keeps us safe, doesn't it? Yeah. And you were at the window a while ago on the 15th floor, and you made the joke, if I fall out the window, tell me I love her, kind of thing. And as you just you saw in the window out. And that consciousness of I'm 15 floors up in the air, and if I fall out of this window, I'm going to die, mm-hmm. is something that keeps you safe. So that from that point of view, both anxiety and fear are good things. If you think about most phobias, if they're phobias, they're fears of height or knives or things like that.
Yeah, fear of heights is another classic one, isn't it?
But they're things that are quite natural. If we didn't have a respect, at least, for heights, then we would have all fallen out of the trees back in evolution.
Yeah,
we'd have all been dead.
So it's inbuilt, that kind of thing.
Yeah, and to be respectful of height, it's different words, isn't it? Respectful isn't like fear, it's like an awareness of.
Do you think something like spiders and snakes is something that been built into humans from... Yeah.
I think that is part of the genetic programming. Also things that are coloured in bright colours, things that are yellow and black usually sting you or bite you.
Yeah.
Yeah, things that are red and black will sting you and bite you. It's that kind of thing.
Ladybirds.
You say that. Once, when I was in the West Country, there was a plague of ladybirds.
Oof.
And they'd come over from an island.
An island?
Just off of the coast.
Not Ireland.
They weren't Irish ladybirds. And they came over in a swarm. And they various places, they were attacking people. And we were in an outdoor market. And this red swarm came down. And they were biting people. They would, because normally they eat aphids and things like that.
Ladybirds bite.
Yeah, but they'd run out of food.
Well, I was going to say I'm not really afraid of ladybirds, but maybe
if there was millions of them.
Yeah.
And I mean, really, the grass was red.
With
ladybirds, and people were running and screaming, and
Flip a neck. That'd make a good, interesting horror movie.
Like the birds.
Attack of the killer ladybirds.
And then you'd be terrified of ladybirds forever. But that's how a phobia happens, isn't it? Something happens, you make the association.
And it can last years, or it can last generations if it's
if you pass it on.
Yeah.
Pass it on to your kids have got it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm conscious at the moment, being a dad and what have you. My son is he's not great with dogs at the moment, actually. There was an incident in the woods where he wasn't hurt at all, but a big dog brushed past him, right, and he was on the floor, and he's a tiny little thing, obviously. And up until that point, he'd been all right with dogs, actually. Mainly because I've been carrying, maybe, and he's pointing, and he'd go woof woof. But this other point when he was on the floor, and a big dog ran past him, and I should have picked him up, man. But hey ho, I got told off by him and by B. And since then, he's not been cool with dogs. He doesn't want to be on the floor with them, even tiny little, one dogs the size of rats. He's not cool with. And I'm trying to show him that they're friendly, and because I love dogs, and I'll just grab hold of it and give it a hug and all that.
I think that that there is an issue for... I mean, we do hear stories in the press, don't we, of kids being mauled or killed by dogs.
Yeah.
And we do need to be respectful of animals and know the personality of the dog. You know, there are certain breeds of dog and certain types of personality of dogs that you need to avoid. So maybe it is good to have a healthy respect, but not to have fear.
Yeah.
And it's getting that balance right between checking something out and being fearful of it in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know. But certainly, I think that anybody that's listening to this, if they do have anything that does kick them off, that in that sense, and kicking off, I mean feelings of panic or anxiety when you consider something, whether it is flying in a plane, whether it is the colour blue or whatever.
Yeah, but it could be things, that, we're talking about things like spiders and heights, which don't crop up all that often.
It could be anything, absolutely.
Fear of, like, being around a lot of people or confined spaces that can they have a big impact on people's
fear of pencils. I mean, I've got an example of a woman I work with who, fearful of flying in a plane, turns out she was assaulted in a lift. We do the rewind. She goes down the end of the corridor, jumps up and down because she can actually go up and down the lift. She's a happy woman. It took us 20 minutes, you know. And then when she comes back again, there's a load of other things that she could do that she didn't know that she couldn't do, like going through a car wash with the wipers, all that kind of stuff. But if there's anything that stops you as an individual doing what you need to do or doing what you'd like to do, then go and do something about it. Go and see some kind of therapist and get it sorted out, because there's no reason why we should be inhibited and have our lives stunted by things that we're phobic about, fearful about.
Yeah. Get it sorted.
Yeah, be happy. That's the key.
All right, some self-help tips, Sean. We mentioned mindful meditation earlier on.
Yeah, I think certainly mindful meditation is, to me, fundamental. I think everybody should do it every day, but unbiased. Yeah, and I know that some people it wouldn't work for. I think that rewind therapy is absolutely fabulous and works for so many people. There's an organisation called Mindfields that train rewind therapists. And if you Googled Mindfields, you can get hold of a therapist that way. Very skilled people. And the other one, which is really, really important, and it's simply this, is being able to acknowledge the fact that you have a phobia. Because lots of people are avoidant of it, and they will be trying to hide it from the people around them, and they're trying to hide it from themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I think that if you do that, in your subconscious mind, the problem just increases. It gets worse and worse.
Yeah.
So it's being honest with yourself, acknowledging that you've got an issue, and then go and do something about it. Everybody deserves to be happy.
Sure. Yeah,
and getting rid of phobias is usually quite an easy process.
Just takes that little leap of... that initial leap, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, making the contact and doing the stuff. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Okay, good.
Like that. Enjoyable as ever, Sean. Resource of the week.
I've put an article up here, which is about post-traumatic stress, and it's about rewinding, and it's called Closure Without Disclosure. And one of the magical things about rewinding is you don't have to go anywhere near your anxiety point, your phobic point. You do it all visually, internally. And the weirdest thing of all is you can do it without telling the therapist what it is you're working on. I've actually had people come along and say to me, I have a problem about something, and we talk about it, don't know what the problem is. They do, I do. It's based around certain memories, and I've actually got them to rewind the memories. I haven't got a clue what they're actually working on. They're telling me, yes, I've done this, yes, I've done that. I'm getting to nod, and yeah, okay, we do that. Fine, finish off the therapy. And some people have never told me what they worked on, but thank you very much, that was great, I've done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had other people that have told me about what they're working on after it's happened.
Right.
Yeah, she's finished it, he's finished it. Now they feel able to disclose it.
Mm, okay.
Yeah, so you don't even have to tell the therapist what it is that you're working on.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I shouldn't have told you about the spider thing, should I?
I should buy you one of those stuffed spiders.
You're going to be playing tricks on me now, aren't you? Sending me photos and all sorts. I'm going to dive into popular culture for my resource of the week. There's a film which I'm sure everyone's heard of, but if you haven't seen it, then you've got to go out. And it's a trilogy, the Dark Knight trilogy, right? Batman. And then in the first film, Batman Begins, it tells you the story of how Bruce Wayne kind of became Batman. Not just because of his whole, what happened to his parents. Have you seen it?
No.
Oh, my word, Sean. Oh, my word. Dear me. But there's an incident when he's a kid and he falls down a well. He's trapped down there and he's a swarm of... Is it a swarm of bats? Swarm?
It'll do.
What's a mass? A load of
a
bats.
Flock.
A flock of bats.
A flock of bats.
Like swarms around him.
Yeah.
And as it would, that leaves quite a mark on him and he's terrified of them. But later in life, and this isn't much of a spoiler because the film's called Batman... He becomes Batman and he uses his fear and projects it onto the criminals of Gotham City, right? And that's basically my little way of trying to get people.
The last time I watched Batman, it was two guys in tights and rather poor mask with da 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 da. It's moved on.
Come on, quite a bit.
You need to bring me up to date.
Yeah, I'll lend you. It's called the Dark Knight.
Right.
It's comic book stuff, but it's real world as well.
Right.
You know, it's they're amazing films. One and two especially. Three's called, I don't know, that's probably the weakest, but you got to see it anyway.
Yep.
It's got a guy called Bane in it in the third one, who is he's someone to be scared of.
He's the Bane of your life.
He's a fearful man. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good films though.
Yeah.
The Dark Knight trilogy.
Okay, I need to watch those. I'll do that. I bet you Robert's got them.
Oh man, Robert will have watched them like 100 times over. Probably.
Yeah, right. Okay.
Yeah. If he hasn't been watching,
I should go and talk to him.
If he hasn't been watching Harry Potter, he watches that. Yeah, Harry Potter. Come on, man. Get on to some Batman.
See, now, if you had a wand, you could just get rid of your spiders, can't you?
Yeah.
Spider armors or something, and they'd fly away.
Yeah, I could. Well, the Spider-Man as well, but I don't think... Is it Peter Parker is the kid that becomes Spider-Man? I don't think he's afraid of them.
He gets bitten by
a radioactive one.
Yeah.
But then he starts flying around and doing mad stuff.
Yeah.
Whereas Batman's a bit more real world.
Maybe if you were bitten by a radioactive bat, you'd be okay with spiders.
Okay.
You could eat them.
Think about that. Yeah, okay, there'll be links to what we've just discussed, right? What's the address?
It's livingthepresent.co.uk.
How cool. I will say that. I'm glad you remember. Next week, we're talking about stress and whether it can actually be a positive force. And what I mean by that is, basically, we need that little bit of stress and kick up the backside every now and then to get stuff done.
You need a bit of tension to get things going.
But I guess finding the right level of stress.
You need energy in your elastic.
Yes. So that's what we're going to dive into next week, eh?
Yeah, cool.
And yeah, sure. Until then, you have a good week.
Goodbye. You take care.
See you, everyone. Bye.
Bye.